Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 109 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We're back after the international break, thank God, some of you might say. When you're watching England beat San Marino 10-0, you always wonder what is the point. But we are back, delighted to see our players return back from international duty as well. It's been a busy time, really, for Everton, which is strange in the break. A lot of news, a lot of articles have come out over the last sort of week to 10 days. And I think it's important we have a chat about what has happened in the last week to 10 days. Probably the first place to start, and it's just me and Lee today talking you through this. So please bear with us as we have a bit of a backwards and forwards over these issues. But the first thing that came out, which might have been a surprise to some, and some may not have seen coming, was the departure of, you'd argue, long-term employee, Dan Donaghy. So he's been associated with the club for many, many years, on and off. Well respected, well liked within the club by all accounts. And about a week ago now, he was relieved of his duties. And as I say, it came as a bit of a surprise. But Lee, what are your thoughts on that? Because you know we always sort of bemoan our luck when it comes to injuries, don't we? In terms of the players who miss a number of games each season. Some players have injuries that are more prevalent than others. Do we think maybe he's potentially fell on his sword and has lost his job due to the fact that our injury record is so poor?
I don't think you can fully point the finger at one guy. He's at fault for everything, right? By any means. But for me, it falls into the... from what can be seen from the outside looking in, is that he's a well thought of guy. He's clearly well liked by a lot of the players. You can see that by a lot of the messages that were back and forth, particularly on Twitter, that he was coming out with and things like that. But then do we point the finger at, again, sort of as we've talked about in the past, do Everton need to be a bit more ruthless and not be sort of considered to be a soft touch and employing people that they like rather than the best people for the job? Now, none of us know exactly how good Dan was. We can only go off, as I said, his record since he's been at the club. And, we have really suffered from injuries, particularly in the last few seasons. And some of them you can't prevent. Some of them potentially you could. What we do know is that, Rafa, has shown things like streaks like this in the past in terms of his ruthlessness and him wanting to take control of certain aspects of the club. I think when he first came in, he even said himself, didn't he, back in Spain, he understands injuries, he understands the medical side of the game. He's almost old school like that. He's not just a coach. And as I said to you before, he's got previous in terms of when he was at Liverpool, when they famously lost 6-2 in the League Cup to Arsenal's kids at the time. I think Ashavin scored four that game at Anfield when Liverpool put a pretty strong side out. I know Gerrard played and a few others, and they got hammered by essentially Arsenal's second string. And Benitez's knee-jerk reaction straight after that was to get rid of Steve Highway on the YTS and effectively say, right, I'm taking control of this. We're not producing the kids nowhere near the level as Arsenal. He did effectively what he did to Steve, what he's done to Donaghy here. So I'm not too surprised, but I'm also kind of, in a way, kind of, if it takes Rafa to come in and hold people accountable and do say, look, are we actually, have we got the best people in the role for these jobs? Are some people coasting? You know what I mean? Are, are, you know, are we essentially being ruthless in the area, trying to get every little inch out of every department of the club, then good. If it takes someone of his personality and his stature to hold that up to the board and say, look, this is what we need, these are the levels we need to be working to, then you know, from an unsentimental point of view, I'm happy for him to do that, and I'm sure you'd agree.
I think maybe the writing was on the wall when we saw, was it last month, we brought in was it Christian Fernandez, who we'd worked with previously at Newcastle. We'd already brought in Jamie Harley as well, who we'd worked with at Newcastle. That was early on in the summer. So he was looking to change things, of course. When a new manager comes in, you do that. I'm thinking back to when he first came in, but he says, and I think one of the things he was focusing on was the injury record that we had and how he looked to improve it, and he wanted to improve it. And that's one thing that he did do at Newcastle, because they had a really poor injury record. And maybe as head of medical services, as his title says, that Daniel Donaghy was the fore guy for many mistakes that have been made. I mean, we've seen, if we look at where we are so far this season in terms of injuries to key players, obviously the standout is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You know, innocuous, you know, walked off against Brighton, wasn't it, in August, hasn't been seen since, which is just incredible. After a couple of setbacks, talk that he's back on the training ground, kicking a ball this week, which is obviously fantastic, but the club will not be held to an actual date of when he's going to return. You look at Yerry Mina, obviously he's had niggles over the course of the season, missed a number of games. Richarlison, Jordan Pickford, Luca Dean, all these key players have had issues. We're not particularly long into the season, and it's always a concern, and it has been for me for many, many years, where you think, what's going on in terms of a Finch Farm? Someone put out a tweet today about Finch, live footage from Finch Farm. It was a video from Squid Games, you know. So it's that kind of belief that whatever happens at Finch Farm to the players, it's not particularly ideal, and they are suffering. And what is the reason behind that? And I think, you know, like you say, we can't afford to be sentimental. Obviously, like we said, he was thinking he was well liked. He had a great relationship with Yerry Mina. That was probably because he spent so much time injured, to be perfectly honest. I've got to say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got to be ruthless. We've got to be ruthless in other areas as well, which is a conversation for another day. But it was one that maybe we should have seen coming after the start we made this season in terms of injuries and the changes that the manager had looked to make, as I say, in July and as recent as last month, with a couple of new additions to the medical team. Because I think he said that Fabian Delph has come back a lot stronger. He's been doing the rehabilitation work with Christian Fernandez, and he's come back really, really strong. Obviously, we've seen him the last couple of games put in decent performances for the time he's been on the pitch, and he's pitched training again today, so I fully expect him to be fit for the Man City game. So, you know, if it does work and it has a positive impact, then fantastic. You know, that's great for us, and long may that continue. Moving on from that, another couple of things that have gone on over the course of the last sort of few days, really, in terms of articles that have come out. And one of the key ones is on Luca Dean. We spoke about Luca Dean at length over the last couple of months or so in terms of what we're seeing from him. I think he's got created the second most amount of chances behind Rafinha for Leeds without registering an assist. We're used to seeing Luca Dean register sort of 6-7 assists a season. The Athletic did a really good article on this in terms of looking at the change in Luca Dean's positioning this season under Rafael Benitez. He's not being asked to be as prevalent in forward areas, should we say, and he's being asked to do a bit more of the defensive work as we look to soak up pressure and hit teams on the counter-attack. But do you think he's getting a bit of unfair criticism, Lee? I know you've mentioned in the past, probably because of the high standards that he's got and how effective he's been since we signed him in an attacking sense. Do you think the fans have been a bit quick to jump on his back?
Overall, I'd probably say yes, really. I'd say yes. I think it's a tricky one to analyse with Luca Dean, because what we all know is that since he's come in and he ousted Baines pretty quickly and then never lost his place again, is that he's a very, very good footballer, isn't he? You know, we signed him at the age of 25, you know, in his peak or approaching his peak. And overall, if you look at that time, I think he's been a very, very good signing for us. You know, he's, if you look at his stats, and the article refers to some of it, you know, he's been one of the most creative players, not just for Everton, but in the whole Premier League as well, in terms of chances created. He's a lovely footballer in terms of how he is technically. He's a technician for me. He's good enough to play in midfield. He's very comfortable with the ball at his feet. If you were to point a weakness at him, and certainly Rafa would have identified this, is his defensive capabilities. You know, particularly in one-on-one against quick players, he gets caught out a few times and he's been at fault for a few goals this season. You could arguably say that first goal against Villa, which was crucial in that match, which could have gone either way, was his fault. And we have seen signs of that. He's not too bad in the air for me either. If you look at him, he's pretty strong in the air for someone, obviously, of his size and stature as well. He doesn't get beat in the air too much on the back post. But yeah, what Rafa will do, Rafa will have come in, and we've, you know, I've mentioned this a couple of times, haven't I, over the last few weeks before this article got released, and Rafa will have looked at him and seen, you know, he's not stupid, he would have analysed his stats, he would have seen how creative he is going forward. And as Townsend said, talking about Rafa when he was at Newcastle, he made him look at the other side of the game. You know, what are you weak at? Well, you're weak at basically, you know, essentially defensively, what Townsend said. And I think obviously we had Townsend's dad on, Troy, and he said the same as well, didn't he? Rafa got him to be a more of an all-round player. And I think that's what he's probably trying to do with Luka, really, for me. I think he realises that, yeah, look, I know you're a good footballer, I know you're great getting forward, but look, I want to try and improve you defensively. And Luka's come out himself and said on the international break, didn't he? You know, he's clearly been told not to bomb forward as often, and play, you know, more of a balanced role as a fullback. Now, what we think as fans in that respect, obviously, then that's a bone of contention. So for me, what are his strengths? His strengths are, for, you know, certainly for us, have been getting forward, putting crosses into the box, and obviously set pieces as well. Now, if you look at his stats, last season he got 9 assists as a fullback, which in a team that essentially finishes mid-table is very strong. The year before he got 8, and the year before that he got 5, including 4 goals. He hasn't scored any goals since that 2018-19 season, which is bizarre, really, for someone who's also
against
got
QPR.
In the cup, yeah, but not in the league. So there is stats in the Premier League, by the way, then. So we're not including cups there either. So, you know, from a fullback point of view, that's really strong statistics, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So where I stand on it, I'm happy for Rafa to try and improve him defensively. You know, if we can improve him, particularly in one-on-one situations, like I said. But for me, we need to make use of how good he is and how creative he is going forward. And he has been whipping in crosses, like you just said there. You know, he's created, just the only person is Rafinha, who hasn't registered an assist and created as many chances. And that shows you. So he is still getting forward and he is still putting crosses in. The argument would be, you know, when I've seen him live more recently, there's plenty of times where he's got in those positions where he gets a yard to whip it in. And he's refrained from doing so because we've had Rondon in there and not Richarlison or Calvert-Lewin. You know, and as we know with Rondon, he hasn't even looked like getting on the end of anything since he's been in the side. So I think that's not helped in terms of his returns, because obviously, you know, Calvert-Lewin is so much stronger in the air, and even Richarlison is. So, yeah, so the article's a really good one because it does try to give a balanced view of kind of where we are with Luka this season. And it points to a lot of his stats. So for me, if I was, you know, in Rafa's shoes here, and I think most of us as fans would agree, let's utilise his creative capabilities. Let's get him, you know, putting in more crosses than he is already. I'd get him back on set pieces straight away as well, because, you know, he's obviously been taken off set pieces, which will cut down his potential assist rate. But you know, I think we've really, have we even scored from a set piece this season? I can't even remember. I think we may have done in the cup, haven't we? I'm not sure we have in the league.
Michael Keane scored, didn't he, against Burnley?
Yeah.
From
Well, the ratio is not great for goals conceded to goals scored from set pieces, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? We're miles in deficit there. And I know Townsend's been taking free kicks. I know Damari Gray has. But for me, you know, I'd get Lucas on it. I can't remember the last time he took a free kick either, and he scored a couple of belting free kicks for us in his first season, didn't he? Do you know what I mean? So I'd personally get him on his share of set pieces as well. So it's an interesting conundrum, and I can see what Rafa's trying to do. But what I'm trying to say is, let's make sure, you know, we try and utilise his creative capabilities, because I think he is, and then the stats show it, he's one of the best in the league.
The article points to the fact that, as well, he's potentially losing a little bit of ground in the French national team to Hernandez. Because the manager Deschamps likes to play 3-4-3, so likes to have some attacking wingers or fullbacks, however you want to dress it up. So he's not being seen, as I say, in that kind of system much, if at all, this season. So he's going to be keen to be more effective and potentially, you know, be unleashed a little bit more in an attacking sense this season. But like you say, maybe putting them on set pieces a little bit more often will help that, because I think we have struggled at times. I think some of the corners against Spurs.
Yeah, we're awful, isn't it?
Going near post, and it's just, you know, for me, very, very rarely works. You know, put a bit of height, put a bit of whip on it. And there's no one better for me, you know, with that left foot than an in-swinging corner, free kick from the right-hand side than Luca Dean. And I think we do need to look at that side of things. But I think, like the Arsenal state, that he did show, I think, a bit of return to form. I thought he was good against Spurs, even in an attacking sense. He was getting a little bit further forward. And hopefully that side of things can return to his game and maybe the manager's system, because, like you say, it's important that we get the best out of our players and obviously play to their strengths if we can as well. But to be fair to him, he's been asked to do something different. He's been asked to be a bit more defensive. And he's done that. And for the large periods of this season, I think he's done pretty well. Bar, you mentioned obviously the Villa game there. I think as the season has gone on, I think defensively he looks a little bit better, which is obviously a positive. But ideally, you want to see Luca Dean, you know, getting further forward and creating chances. But again, you know, it's about the quality of players he's creating chances for, and maybe we had a bit more quality for longer periods this season up top. He might have registered a couple of assists by now. Who knows?
Well, exactly. It's the same situation with Rafinha, because Bamford's been out for a long time, hasn't he? And Bamford scored most of their goals last season. They're their main central striker. You know, we've had Calvert-Lewin miss the majority of the season, who again is our main central striker. So, you know, there's probably no coincidence in the fact those two, who are clearly both fantastic players for me, and they're obviously, you know, both of them ironically left-footed, but both of them have obviously got great deliveries. But if you haven't got a top centre-forward in there to put it away, then there's nothing else you can really do. But also I wanted to mention, most of our creative outlet under Ancelotti last season, if you remember, was obviously the switch of play from James over to that side. Ancelotti quickly realised that, you know, how good Lucas was in terms of his actual, you know, crossing ability, in terms of his technique. And obviously, James, as soon as he got that ball on that side, he was cutting back onto his left foot and clipping that ball to him on a sixpence every time. A lot of our goals came from that side, didn't it? You know, if you do remember us talking about it, we were very unbalanced. And I think teams then obviously, you know, doubled up down that side, knowing that basically nothing was going to come down the right side. You know, we've been saying for a long time, as much as we love Seamus and things like that, we do need another version of Luca Dean on that side. Because then, you know, it makes you unpredictable. It means you can go either way. And it means, you know, if we could create, if both fullbacks, like, you know, dare I say it, those across the park there, you know, both of them, you know, bomb high up the pitch, and they can, and they both get, you know, close to 7, 8, 9 assists a season each. And it, you know, if you could do that from both sides, it suddenly makes you a completely different side to deal with. And I think that's, he's probably been a victim of that as well, that teams, you know, are trying to shut that side down because they know how good he is. He doesn't need much room to put crosses in, does he? You know, you can see it. He always looks to, shapes to cross it, faints to cross it, gets that extra yard, and then misses the guy who's trying to block it. The amount of times he's done that and then whipped it and missed him by inches, and then someone's buried a header in on the back of that. You know, so he doesn't need much space to be able to whip his foot around it. He's got that technique. And, you know, the interesting part of the article was also saying how the French national team, for every player, don't they prepare, you know, stats from each game that they play for their clubs, and they present it to the player. And that obviously helps them as well, ironically, when they're trying to negotiate contracts, in terms of, look, this is my stats for you as a club, or for us as a club, this is my stats, how I compare to other left backs in the league and other left backs across the top five, you know, leagues in Europe. So you know, that helped him arguably get obviously a new contract, which was obviously very recently. But, you know, if you were to sit down with most fans, I know he's been getting a bit of flack, but if you were to sit down with most fans and say, look, would you have offered Luka Dean a new contract? Snap your hand off. You know, snap your hand off all day. If you've got a fullback, as I said, producing those sort of stats, 9 assists last season, 8 the year before, you're going to do it, aren't you? Of course you're going to do it all day. So, yeah, I think he's been harshly criticised this season. I think fans have been quick to jump on him. He has been slightly out of form in terms, particularly going the other way. But yeah, for me, you know, that Spurs is an indicator of what we're going to get from him, then you know, long may it continue from that point on.
Let's hope, as I say, let's hope we see more of that and a return to that side of things for him. He is now at an age at the peak of his career, if you like, for a fullback. But one final thing which has come out this week, which is probably worth discussing, and it ties in a way with something that came out in The Athletic. But there's been a bit of talk about Spurs potentially being in for Jordan Pickford this summer as a replacement for Hugo Lloris. I had a bit of chat on social media about potential prices and fees and things like that. And there does seem to be quite a bit of noise around this. So it does seem to be an actual thing where there is interest. Now, my point with Jordan Pickford is if we look to sell Jordan Pickford in the summer, he'd have 2 years left in his contract. He's England number one. He's also at the peak of his career, which is absolutely vital. So therefore, I'll be looking at any kind of starting amount at around about sort of £50-55 million, in my opinion. Now, this is not to say that I want to sell Jordan Pickford, but we have to look at who are our assets, and the assets that demand the most amount of money will be Jordan Pickford, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. That's the honest truth. Now, what are your thoughts on that, Lee? Because when I say it links back to an article, The Athletic had mentioned something in regards to peak ages of players and positions within the Everton squad. Now, Jordan Pickford is just at the start of his peak, according to this fantastic graph here, which we'll put out later on as well. It's a brilliant thing, which dead straightforward, but highlights the peak age for each particular position and where each player within our squad sits around the peak age category. Now, Pickford's just entered it as a goalkeeper, so straight away, you're going to demand big money. And I've seen some silly things out there, people saying, oh, 30 million quid, which is about £2-3 million more than we pay for him, which is just ridiculous. What are your thoughts on that link? And also, when we're talking money, what would you be looking at if it came down to selling Jordan Pickford?
Well, firstly, yeah, you know, you and I both read the article that Greg put out this morning. It's a really insightful article, actually, on The Athletic. As you said, you'll put out the graphic. It just basically tells us where we are as a squad in terms of players approaching their peak, in their peak, and after their peak, and every position. It breaks down in terms of, you know, keeper, you know, defence, centre-back, midfield, whatever, you know, when they sort of hit their peak years and where we are as a squad. And it clearly highlights that we are, you know, shall we say, woefully short in certain areas in terms of positions. Now, we know a lot of that. We know that where do we sit in terms of the age of some of those players. And it's always important, isn't it, to try and have a mix, that real mix of sort of youth, people in their prime, and obviously people, you know, with experience at the latter end of their careers. I'd probably say we're a little bit top heavy in certain areas at the minute, and that clearly shows from the graph. But Pickford, for me, yeah, like you said before, he clearly is, you know, really stepped up in the last 12 months for me. There was a lot of concerns about him last season at times in terms of his concentration, in terms of him costing us points in certain games. And, you know, we've been over that. But then obviously Carlo left him out the side for a few games. I think by all accounts got him sitting down with a psychologist to analyse that side of his game. And ever since then, he's not really looked back. He's been one of our best performers since that time. Now, if those links are genuinely true and Conte is trying to get in someone to replace Lloris, who's clearly obviously at the very tail end of his career, then for me, and this maybe sounds a bit over the top, I said to you before, I'd be looking at about 70 million. Now, that may sound ridiculous, but then when you look at what Chelsea paid for Kepa and you look at what they paid for Mendy after that, they've essentially got, you know, two 70, 80 million pound keepers in as number one and two. You know what I mean? And if anyone can turn around to me and say Kepa is a better keeper than Jordan Pickford, then show me. Do you know what I mean? Because he's clearly not. And, you know, there's so much so that he went out and bought Mendy. Now, I think Mendy, you know, he's shown it, is a real top-draw keeper. So you can now see what they paid that money for him. But for me, Jordan, like you just said, he's been England number one now for the last 4 or 5 years. Other keepers have come along and tried to oust him, and they haven't. You know, Southgate clearly rates him. In the last two tournaments he's played for England, he's arguably been their best player. He's been phenomenal. You know, and he nearly won them the shootout against Italy. You know, if it wasn't for the other lads who couldn't take a pen. So from that perspective, there's a premium that comes with that. Now, I think if they came in with a 70 million offer, you'd have to sell him. And then if we could go out and buy, and you know, I couldn't name you any top keepers off the top of my head now, young keepers coming through, but if you went and bought someone in his sort of, you know, like we did with Jordan, 22, 23, and paid 20 mil for him, and then invested the rest in other areas of the field, then you would do it. Of course you'd do it. I mean, I'd personally much rather be able to cash in on Pickford and improve our right-back situation or in midfield or potentially another winger. I'd much rather do that than have to sell a Richarlison or a Calvert-Lewin. Me personally, and I'm sure most people would agree. So, yeah, so if the rumours are to be true, and we all know Spurs have got a load of money to spend in January, then let's see what happens. Watch this space. You know, I'm sure the club have got potentials lined up anyway, coming in behind him. But interestingly, I was at an event yesterday, actually, and I was chatting to a guy whose son's who's at the City Academy. And there's a young lad, I think he said it's Jensen's, I don't know for sure. It's Jensen he used to play. Is it Jensen he used to play with Blackburn? I'm sure he said it. Was it John Jensen? I can't remember anyway. I can't remember exactly. But he did say there's a young keeper coming through at Everton. He's only 16 and apparently he's really well thought of. Now, I've not checked that, so maybe I'm spouting. But he did say that there's a young... He did actually know this lad's son, and apparently Everton really rate him highly, young kid coming through as a keeper. Obviously, he's not going to get in the team at that age. But, you know, it's good to see that obviously if that is the case, then we have got potential coming through the academy, certainly in that position, because we haven't really produced anyone as a keeper that I can think of, can you, in the last, 10, 20 years coming through?
That's one of the biggest
Rooney and Barkley and Osman and people.
One of the biggest downfalls of our system, isn't it? You know, one of the things which needs to be improved, which I know Brands has done a lot of work on, and hopefully we do start to reap some rewards over the next sort of 18 months, 2 years on younger players coming through to save us spending silly money in the transfer markets on replacement players. That's the idea of having a good development system. But like you say, I mean, a goalkeeper would be a rarity almost coming through the academy into the first team. But I think that the key point that you made there for me is that when we're looking at trying to raise funds, if you like, out of those three players that we mentioned, Jordan Pickford is probably the one that you would accept selling more than Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison. So you would accept, you know, 55, 60, whatever it might be, million pound sale of Jordan Pickford, because he's probably more replaceable than the other two. And that's the key thing really with that. But obviously it's early days. Obviously the rumours have only just really come out over the last few days or so in the Telegraph. Whether there's concrete interest, we don't know. I think there's a lot of noise around it, so there probably is. But I'm sure Jordan Pickford will be on a lot of clubs' wish list, to be honest with you. It's what they're willing to pay and what we're willing to accept. But he's just, as I said, he's just come into his peak years for a goalkeeper. England number one. Like you said, he's been our standout player in the last couple of major international tournaments for England. And his form over the last probably 12 months, maybe a bit less, has been exceptional, which has been good for us. And he's certainly become less erratic in that time as he's matured as a goalkeeper. So it comes with it with a premium. And the talks of £30 million for me are absolutely ludicrous. And
yeah, mate, it's never going to be that. Not for someone in his peak right now. You know, certainly got his peak years ahead of him. I've just checked. It is Sebastian Jensen. It is. So he was telling the truth, this fella. He did have links with Everton, so I wasn't just making it up. He's played for England under-16s. He's played for England every level. And apparently he's really well thought of, so he's in our youth academy at the minute. Hopefully the lad comes through. You know, if you can produce a keeper, that can save you a fortune, couldn't you? Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so look, let's watch this space and see what happens. Would we want to sell him in January halfway through season? Probably not. But depends on the offer. If the offer was ridiculous and it was a serious offer, then you maybe your hand may be forced on it. As we know from FFP, we clearly need to probably have to sell one of our assets, don't we, in order to reinvest if we really want to spend or give Rafa some money to improve the squad. So, you know, as I said, let's watch this space with regards to any developments in that area. It's not surprising for me that he is being linked. You know, would you say Spurs are on par with us in a minute? Probably. But if Conte can get his hands on that team, then, you know, they're certainly potentially a top six team, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I fully expect Spurs to progress this season under their new manager. And as a, you know, he's looking to improve their squad, and I'm sure Jordan Pickford, for me, is a better goalkeeper and more reliable than Hugo Lloris, and would be a good replacement for them. But let's see if that develops into anything more concrete as the months go on. But we're going to take a short break there before we look ahead to the difficult trip to the Etihad Stadium on Sunday. Welcome back to the second part of the Unholy Trinity podcast, where we're going to have a forward look to our next game, which is obviously Manchester City on Sunday afternoon, the early game, 2 o'clock. I've just seen the latest injury news, which doesn't make for good reading, again, in terms of... God. Well, it's just in terms of who we thought might be back, it is not back. So just to confirm that we are without, obviously, Ablaye Decore, we mentioned me before we recorded today, about not rushing him back for that game. Andre Gomez and Dominic Calvert-Lewin are still out, as is Yerry Mina. He's not fit for the game against Manchester City. So those four players out of the squad. No talk of Tom Davis. There was a little rumour flying around of Tom Davis a knee injury a couple of days ago. So how true that is, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But we're pretty much going into the City game with what we had against Spurs. And I suppose the key question really is, do you go into the game with much hope of getting anything out of it?
No, you just told me that, mate. It's bleaker than it was before. It's weird that, because I heard rumours that Mina was training all week. So maybe he wasn't. He doesn't want to risk him. Also, as well, you know, you have to... A debt, as horrible as it is to say, as an Evertonian, City have won the last 7 games in a row against us, and we had a pretty decent record against them before that. But obviously they've had the number on us, as they have with many teams, and arguably it's our hardest fixture of the season. It's City away for most teams is the hardest fixture. Now with those players out, it makes it, you know, a really, really difficult task. I think we pretty much know how the game's going to shape anyway, like they do against most teams. And the blueprint to beat that City team, particularly at the Etihad, as Southampton have shown in getting a point recently, and then Palace beat them, obviously, at their gaff before the international break, is you're just going to have to, you know, concede 70+% possession of the ball, make sure you're compact, make sure you're hard to break down, make sure you cover those basically, two-on-one situations out wide in particular. And try and have some sort of threat on the counter-attack. With the likes of Damari Gray and Townsend. And Townsend famously scored an absolute worldie there for Palace not long ago, didn't he, where it fell to him on the edge of the box and he's hit an absolute screamer with his left foot. So hopefully he can reproduce those sort of goods for us. But I think we, as I said, we pretty much know how the game's going to go. And as always with City, you've just got to stay in it. I mean... Strangely, they've not scored as many goals as they have done in previous seasons. They've actually been defensively better this season than they have been going forward. And they've only conceded 6 goals in the Premier League, and that's second to Chelsea, who've conceded 4, I think. So from that point of view, obviously Guardiola's really improved them in terms of not shipping too many. But at the same time, that, you know, whilst they're still creating chances, they arguably haven't got that out-and-out number 9, like they have done in the past with Aguero. And obviously they missed out on Kane in the summer to put the ball in the back of the net. Having said that, we're talking about a team that's, you know, every single one of their players will pretty much walk into most team sides. So we all know how it's going to go. We've just got to make sure, like I said, we stay in the game as long as possible and try and nick something on the counter or from a set piece.
Yeah, I think that's the only way. We are going to sit in and hopefully be able to get something on the break. They're such a difficult side. I mean, obviously, we've seen Palace go there and win a few weeks ago. Whether we've got the same kind of counter-attacking paces as Crystal Palace, potentially not, because they are full of a lot of players with that pace and power. So we've just got to go in there and just got to be tight. You know, I fully expect to see that midfield three, if you like, again, in terms of Milan, Fabian Delph and Andros Townsend at the point of those three. I just don't see any kind of change from the side that we put out against Tottenham based on what we've heard on the injury front. So your back four of Dean Coleman, Keane and Godfrey, obviously Pickford in goal. And then Alan, Delph, Townsend, Gray, Anthony Gordon and Richarlison, that'll probably be the 11 which go in. And it's another big chance for the likes of Anthony Gordon to show what he's all about. I think he's been fantastic for us in the last few weeks. And you've got to go in there with some kind of hope because, you know, sides are not unbeatable. You know, Palace has shown that, other side has shown it this season against the better side, and they can go to these places and get results and get wins and cause problems. And I think the Spurs game has probably given us a little bit of a boost that we needed from a mentality point of view. I think we were definitely floundering after a couple of really, really poor performances against Watford and that first half against Wolves. So, you know, we've got to go in there with a little bit of hope and you just got to be really, really disciplined and see what we can get from the game, because anything is a bonus, and that might be a defeatist way of looking at things, but you've got to be honest. And if we pick anything up at the game, then I'd be delighted with the points, and I'm sure the players would be as well. But like we know, difficult game. We'll wait to see what sort of City side are going to, what side they're going to put out and who's returned well from international duty for them as well. But whatever side they put out, the squad is so good. You know, they can replace like for like and not have a drop off in quality whatsoever. So massively difficult game.
They've been, you know, their squad is very, very good. I mean, to think they even were thinking of getting rid of Bernardo Silva, by the way, in the summer. And arguably, Bernardo Silva's been, you know, their best player this season. He's been outstanding in the games I've watched him. You know, his energy levels are incredible, getting up and down the pitch. And he's obviously technically very good on the ball as well. You know, for me, him and Foden and Cancelo have been probably their three best players. I mean, Cancelo is some player. You know what I mean? He's obviously been playing more at left back for them. But, you know, he loves to cut in on that right foot and get shots and crosses off. And, yeah, if you look at the stats as well, I mean, that backs it up as well. He's one of the most creative players for them as a team. So he's been a very good player. Interestingly, I think I said to you, Gary Neville mentioned actually him after the game when City played United the other week, and he got asked a few questions post-match, and he was saying there was two players they had at Valencia that I was trying to peddle to United. He goes, one was Cancelo and one was Andre Gomez. You know, I was on the phone on the blowers to him saying, these are the two lads you need to get. And obviously Cancelo's gone on, you know, as we've seen, to Inter and then now to the Premier League. And I know they paid a lot of money for him, but looks a real player. Gomez, sadly, has had his career halted by, obviously, that injury. And he's still out injured now, isn't he, with a muscular injury. So, it's a shame, really, because Andre, you know, I think if you had Delph sitting and then Alan Hunter and Andre at the tip of it, looking to slide people in and things, that thing that ironically would suit him, wouldn't it? Where there's a bit more less defensive responsibility. You know, at the tip of a three there, I think it would really suit him in terms of his ability on the ball and ability to try and be creative a bit further up the pitch. We all know his weaknesses is when he's having to sit deeper and play a more defensive role, which is obviously doesn't suit his game. So, you know, the sooner we can get him back as well as another body in midfield, the better. Obviously, we'd much rather, for me, if it's a risk to play Mina and it's a risk to play Decore and try and rush him back, you'd rather have him available for the Brentford game which will be a physical battle, and also will be, you know, arguably a more winnable game, isn't it, than the City one. So you'd rather have that those guys back for that rather than risking them and potentially, you know, pulling up again in a game where, let's be honest, if we had a fully fit team, even with Calvert-Lewin, Decore and Mina in this team, it'd be a tough match anyway, wouldn't it?
At the mind, you said Decore is probably a week or two away from being back. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is at least 2 or 3 weeks away. So we're talking middle, end of December for Calvert-Lewin personally. That's just my personal opinion. You don't want to rush him back in, that's for sure. You want to make sure that he's recovered from the setbacks that he's had. And the same with Decore, like you say, you know, the more winnable game is Brentford. Now, whether or not he keeps him out for even the, you know, to come back for the derby so many days after the Brentford game, who knows, you know, but the squad will look a lot healthier when we have those four players that we mentioned at the start back fit, because we know how short we are in quite a few areas. But what do we think in terms of prediction? Are you going to go with your head? Are you going to go with your heart?
It's always hard to predict these sort of things because, as I said, we know how the game's going to pan out, mate. Personally, you'd take a 0-0 or 1-1 right now. And I know we said that before the Spurs game, and in the end, we arguably shaded that and probably should have nicked it. We just couldn't get that goal that we probably deserved on the day. The last time we had a result against him, ironically, mate, it was under Koeman. Koeman had two draws at the Etihad, and we beat them famously 4-0 at Goodison, didn't we? So we obviously haven't done anything since then. One of the only things he probably got right when he was at the club. I'm probably going to say it'll either be a 1-1, hopefully we'll nick something, or it'll be, you know, a 2-2 or 3-0 job, I think, to City.
But you've said you've got to go in there and hope we're going to pick something up. I think we'll probably lose the game, but I'd like to, in that kind of game, in that kind of situation, I think as long as the side put a performance in and you can see that, you know, we're actually having a go and we are trying to do something and we're in the game and we're giving them a game, we don't just fold. I don't mind it as much as just, you know, like to the Watford game where we just fell apart. Even Villa away when it was on a knife edge and then we just fell apart again. And if we show something, I'll be fairly pleased. But I think I can see it being a 3-1 defeat, to be perfectly honest. And I hope I'm wrong. When we record on Sunday post-match, I hope that I got it totally wrong. But we'll see.
For me, that pivotal game, mate, look at it more and more now. Obviously, the injuries have not helped us whatsoever. But the pivotal game was that West Ham game, wasn't it? Where it was 0-0, clearly the game was 0-0 written all over it, and they've nicked it on a set piece and won 1-0. Since then, West Ham, who were then behind us at the time, has now gone on and kicked on and obviously managed to sort of push into the sort of higher end of the league. And we've gone the other way, haven't we? Do you know what I mean? And, you know, we were 2-1 up against Watford the following week. We all said that we needed to bounce back and win that game, 2-1 up. I wouldn't say we were cruising because we were never comfortable in that match, but we were 2-1 up with 10 minutes to go and somehow blew that. And then ever since then, it's, you know, we obviously then lost to Wolves and, you know, the wheels have come off a little bit. But we also have to, you know, caveat it with the fact that, you know, the spine of our team has been decimated and any manager in that scenario would struggle. So, you know, from that point of view, we have to give it a bit of leeway. But for me, when the more I look at it now, the more I look at that West Ham game and the last 10 minutes then obviously of the Watford game that came after it, essentially sort of derailed the sort of half-decent start that we had.
If we're sitting there with four more points than what we've got, we'd be in a really good position, wouldn't we? And satisfied. Yeah. You know, it shows you how tight it actually is and how, on an, you know, we've had the number of games which have been on a knife edge. And like I say, you know, the Watford one especially was, for me, probably the worst defensive display I've ever seen from an Everton side. So poor, but you know, we can't afford to dwell. We've kicked on a little bit. We've shown a little bit of bottle against Spurs, I thought, which is good. But obviously, the toughest of tough games coming up against Man City before obviously Brentford and the Merseyside derby. But let's hope, fingers crossed, we can get something from the game. But we'll be back to look back on that Sunday post-match with guest Jim Keoghan's coming on, been on once in the past, Jim, fantastic Evertonian, author as well of many football books, including that at Monza, which we'll give a bit of a plug on the day. One of his latest ones actually called Is It Just Me? Isn't Modern Football Shit? Which is an absolute classic, but the books are fantastic, great Christmas presents. So speaking to Jim on Sunday post-match, pleased to be back as well. So we look forward to speaking to you all then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.